Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back, 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being a part of my day. Always a pleasure to continue to be with you. Thank you for being here. Ryan Young is back. Ryan is a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org. His research focuses on regulation, which CEI is, that's what their strong suit is, trade policy, antitrust regulations, which one, I may ask him a little bit about that in a little bit. But now we're going to talk about minimum wage, and he's just the guy to do it. Ryan Young, welcome back.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
So you wrote a piece recently on the minimum wage, and I'm glad you did. The minimum wage increase, the minimum wage has been at 7.25 for a long time, and yet 60% of small business owners tell us that they're already paying $15 or more to their employees. And so a minimum wage, as far as on Main Street, a minimum wage is irrelevant, increase to $15 is irrelevant to 60% of small business owners, and the others, it's going to hurt them. But the Democrats put it in the reconciliation bill, but it didn't work, did it?
No, not this time. There are a lot of reasons behind that. One reason is that about 30 states already have minimum wages higher than the federal.
Yep.
So the real nationwide minimum wage is closer to $12 already.
Huh.
But that doesn't mean a $15 increase would still have bad consequences, because it would.
Yeah, there's no question. Why do you think it would?
Well, there are two reasons. One is what I call the regional differences argument, and the second is trade-offs. The regional differences argument is pretty simple. It basically means that downtown Manhattan and, say, rural Nebraska have different costs of living.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have the same minimum wage.
Yeah, you've got a tiny efficiency apartment will cost you three times as much to rent as somebody in Flyover America, a family of five, can own and make a payment on a three-bedroom, two-bath rancher. The payment on that would be a third of the rent for a tiny efficiency in New York. That's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah, and part of that's canceled out by the fact that wages are lower in rural America than in Manhattan.
Right.
You know, $15 minimum wage wouldn't even be noticed in a place like that, whereas it would have severe trade-offs in most of the rest of the country. And that's my second argument, trade-offs. It's not a free lunch. Minimum wages have trade-offs. And it's not just job losses. The debate tends to focus almost exclusively on that. People who oppose the minimum wage have been citing the Congressional Budget Office report that came out saying it would cost 1.4 million jobs.
Yes.
Which is probably in the right ballpark, but there's a lot more to it, because small businesses and big businesses, too, do not want to fire anybody.
That's right.
I mean, what kind of cold-hearted person would want to do that? So what they do is they look for other ways to find cuts. For example, workers don't just make wages. They also make non-wage pay.
Right.
That's things like a restaurant gives free food to workers for as part of their shift.
Right.
Stores might give an employee discount. Things like health insurance, tuition credits for younger workers. Those things will be cut. Wages go up, non-wage pay goes down to cancel out, which means not only are the workers not any better off on net, but regular wages are taxable, whereas a lot of those fringe benefits are not. You would actually see people making the same amount of money paying more in taxes and having less take-home pay.
I want to come back to something you said a minute ago, though, because this is really important, and this is a point that I've been making ever since it came out early in January. And that is that early February, I guess I should say, the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, which is allegedly nonpartisan, and this is what you said a minute ago. They said 900,000 people would be raised above the poverty line, but 1.4 million people would lose their job, And I pointed out, Ryan, that that's fourth grade math. You know, that, I don't have to have a college education to figure out that that's not a good deal, right?
Right. That's exactly right. And there's a lot more to it, too. Who actually makes the minimum wage? It's very rarely people who are the sole breadwinner in their house.
Right.
Your average minimum wage worker lives in a household of three, is under 25, and has a middle-class living standard. They're not someone who's struggling to make the rent. They're someone who's young, doesn't have a lot of work experience, and maybe still lives with their parents or with roommates.
Well, and it's an entry-level wage. It's not something you should plan on making as a career. That's the other thing that Democrats completely miss. Hold on to that thought. We're going to talk some more about this after the break and a few other things with our good friend Ryan Young. He's with Competitive Enterprise Institute. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'm with you.
And if you leave me now, you'll take away the very heart.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.